Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone. This is another edition of the Gregory Crawford on Basketball Show. We do this show every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Pacific Time. And as I always say, if you can't listen live, as many of you can't, you can always go to the podcast. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. Punch in the search engine, which is right there, Gregory Crawford on Basketball, and we'll get every single show that we've ever done. And we've done a lot of them, and they're always interesting. And speaking of interesting, it is the first Wednesday of the month of October, and we have this outstanding basketball coach on the first Wednesdays of the month all the time, Kip Iohn from Willamette University, the men's basketball coach, and Willamette is a member of the Northwest Conference, which is Division III. Kip, good evening.
Hey, Greg, how you doing? Glad to be back on, as always.
Glad to have you. You're a great guest. You got great information, great insight, great thought pattern, and love having you on, and thank you. You're doing great. And, Kip, let me start out by asking you, you can officially start Division III practices on October 15th.
Yep.
What are you and your coaching staff doing right now to get ready for that? That I'm not asking for proprietary information, but
mean. No, absolutely. You know, I think that day, you know, it's getting closer, but it couldn't feel farther away just because we're so anxious. I think us and the as a staff and, our, and the players themselves are so ready to be out there for real with the practice gear on and everything ready to go. But great question. You know, I think before I talk about what we're doing as a staff, one of the things I got to do today with one of my assistants is go down to see Oregon State practice. Got a ton of time in the office with Coach Tinkle. Got a ton of time watching them on the floor. Got to break it down afterwards with him, which was, you know, an amazing thing for me to be able to sit and trade scheme ideas and philosophy ideas with such a good basketball coach and Wayne Tinkle, and such a gracious guy. You know, they're 3 days into their practice, and he's sitting there making time for me to talk and pick his brain about how he just goes about doing things. So that was a huge, I thought it was a great day for our program, just in terms of Coach Colville and I got to see a really good program at work behind the scenes and how they do things. So I think that whetted my appetite even more for what's coming up for us. But, you know, the main thing to answer your question is the main thing we're trying to do right now is figure out what does our beginning look like? What do we need to have in by the time we play Texas Tyler on November 18th, and how are we going to get to that package being ready? I think in the past, I would have been able to show you day by day, practice by practice for the first 25 practices exactly what we're going to do. But as I've gotten older and hopefully talked to smart people like Coach Tinkle and some other great coaches I have access to, you know, the more I realize we don't want to plan very much further out than 3 days in advance as far as minute by minute on the court. You know, we have a calendar of install as a staff that we'll go over and adjust as we're talking to each other day by day throughout the next 10 days. But by the actual what we're going to do on October 15th, what we're going to do on October 16th and October 17th is probably as far as we'll go in heavy detail, because we want to be flexible. We want to be able to pivot on, hey, we thought we'd be able to get this play in, but guess what? We're pretty bad at it. So let's spend another day getting better at it rather than being a slave to that calendar like I probably was in my early days as a head coach and rush through it just to say the calendar's done, but maybe the team's not. So we're trying to save a little bit of flexibility while at the same time being as prepared as we think we need to be.
Very good. Kip, are you a coach that likes for your players on practice day to know the practice schedule in advance? Do you like to surprise them or do you like
question.
To mix it up?
You know, I think I want them to know, you know, in advance the time, and I want to be very true to the time. Like if I say we're going 4:30 to 6:30, I think it's a breach of trust between me and them, and it's the start of a slippery slope if I go to 6:34. And it might sound like a really small thing, but I think as a head coach, if you can't tell your kids the truth about when practice is over, they're going to start wondering what else you're not willing to tell them the truth about. So I've always been very cognizant of telling them on the calendars that they get from us in August, hey, that first day of practice is going to go 10 a.m. to noon. Now, within that, there's a bunch of variation. There's a bunch of random variables and sudden change we're trying to throw at them to make them practice as chaotic as a game can possibly be. But they know, hey, if I give Coach these 120 minutes of everything I've got, he's going to get me out of here when he promised to. And I think that's big. I think it's big in terms of that trust, but I think it's also big in requiring and having the expectation of the hard work you're going to get. Because I think what we can get in trouble with as coaches is if we save something for the end and go over the time frame, especially when you make it conditioning or something that's punishing-like, I think kids, you start to lose kids and you start to lose their energy early in practice because they're saving it for what they think is going to be bad at the end. And I'd rather have all out throughout the day.
I love asking coaches this question because I don't know the answer, and I love asking questions I don't know the answer about. What is the difference? You're a very successful and an expert coach on basketball, Kip, and people really think a lot of you, your peers, which I think is critical, the way they feel about you, and nothing but positive comments. But my question to you is, what in your words is the difference between being in shape as a basketball player and being in game shape?
God, that's a great question. I think that the part that's always hard to simulate, I mean, you can give kids a great plan that a professional strength and conditioning coach has put together as far as cardiovascular endurance. And it's X amount of this running with this lift and this reps, and that's all. And that's like what you would how you categorize, that's being in shape. The game shape, I think, is the added mental stress that your body has to endure while at the same time dealing with the physical endurance you prepped it for. So I think that's the part that always takes kids, no matter what you do in the preseason, what you do in the early part of practices, you can't simulate the excitement, the adrenaline, and the stress they feel when a game's happening that's also taxing their body on top of the physical endurance they've already done. So, you know, it's never the same up and down three times in the first part of practice as it is the first game because of that extra adrenaline and that extra stress. So I think that's the hard part. And nobody's really solved it yet to stay in game shape year round. You can stay in physical shape, and probably the players nowadays do a lot better than even when I played, staying in physical shape year round. But the game shape, I think, is only doable if you can create that real environment and the scoreboard's on. Somebody's keeping track of these points, and we're going to win or lose and have that stick with us for a while.
Yeah, very interesting correlation there. They always talk to the first-time astronauts that go up. Of course, we've kind of stopped that program, but the first thing they would say would be, you could never simulate the liftoff. So
oh,
it's kind of like,
yeah,
you
that
could
makes
never
sense.
Simulate
absolutely,
game
yeah.
conditions.
Right,
yeah,
absolutely.
Kip, how are you feeling about your, you know, it's October 5th, you know, you're 10 days away from practice. How are you feeling about this 16-17 Bearcat team at this moment?
I feel really excited. You know, I think all of us do at this time of year, but I think the reasons we all like our teams this time of year are always different, you know, even from the year before or the year before that with your own program. You know, different teams and different years provide different opportunities for you guys, for you to try to find ways to make the team successful. You know, what I like about this group is the off-season commitment. I thought we had a great amount of work put in. You could see that when certain players got back on campus, guys had changed their body types, you know, and that's just strictly through being in the weight room, playing a lot and running a lot. And that's something you can only hope they do at Division III level. You can't require them, obviously, if they want to be players and they want to have that self-motivation to get much better, they're going to do it. So that's always encouraging. And I think we can be versatile. I think we can play with a bigger group. I think we can play with a smaller lineup. I think we can play with a shooting lineup. I think we can play with a slashing lineup. So that hasn't always been the case for us, you know, in my time here. And I think in our league, you have to be versatile in order to win because, number one, you're playing so many different styles of coaching and schemes in our league, which are all very smart, very well thought out by the coaches and the programs. But also you're playing Friday, Saturday night. So if you don't have a versatile roster that can play different ways just naturally based on the personnel you've accumulated, you're going to have a hard time being able to scheme and coach up between the time the game ends at 10 p.m. Friday and you tip off again 6 o'clock Saturday. There's not a lot of turnaround time there for you to really have a handprint on the game as a coach. You better hope you just have a versatile roster. So if you go to Whitworth and play Coach Logie in a very, very specific scheme with a lot of size and a lot of ball movement, then the next night you got to go to Walla Walla where Bridge and his army is waiting for you at the border of the city with the pressure. Your team better be versatile because you're not going to be able to save them yourself. So that part I really like about my group. We got a core group of guys that can play in a lot of different ways. You know, that's my job to make sure they're ready and able to do those different types of functions that I think they're capable of.
Tip, Willamette University is known worldwide for its academics. It's got an iconic alumni base that we could talk for 10 hours and not mention even
the
fraction of the great alumni. But what do you tell your players, especially your new players, about how they need to balance their academic load with being basketball players? Of course, you want to get as many W's as possible, but I know that you want those people going out in society and being great grads.
Yep. You know, and I think that starts in your recruiting. I think you lay the foundation of your program in front of a recruit and say, hey, listen, there's a lot of Division III programs, not only in the Northwest, but in the country or Division II NAIA, that you're probably good enough to go play at. But if you want to play here, you've got to follow this foundation that we believe in, and that's men, family, legacy. And there's a reason we always say men, family, legacy in that order. Because I think it speaks to what you bring up with us is you're going to be a quality human being, a quality man first, before we even worry about the type of basketball player you are. So obviously, it's like a lot of coaches do. We do our groundwork and we get a lot of recommendations from kids that fit that they've been brought up with some of those morals and have been in programs that probably teach that at the high school level as well. So when I get them, the expectation has already been set that when you come here, the first thing that's got to happen before you get a jersey is you prove yourself in every other facet of being a man and being a Bearcat man. So that includes academics, that includes class attendance, that includes your conduct on campus, off campus, on the weekends, because we all know college is a great time in one's life, but also a time of a lot of tough choices that you need to be able to make. And, you know, I'm not Batman. I don't follow you off campus on the weekends. I don't check in with you every 26 minutes. We expect you to be that quality man for us. And then once you do that, then all those same characteristics of being committed, loyal, having a great work ethic, all those things that have carried you to being a good man should carry you to being a hell of a basketball player too. So we think that by recruiting to that foundation and holding our program to that foundation of men, family, legacy, we'll be able to take care of exactly what you're saying, and guys knowing the priorities they need to put in their life with balancing hoops and academics and their social life and their family. Hopefully we've recruited them to that plan and they stick to it.
A starting lineup always has significance, maybe overrated.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say it's underrated. How prior to that November 18th, do you like to get that starting lineup out there? And what's your coach philosophy in regards to that?
That's a great question. You know, what we kind of evolved to is our first 3 days are very, kind of a thing we've been talking about a lot is what gets measured gets done. So in that term, our first 3 days, we're gonna film, we're gonna stat, we're gonna have every metric we can find in grading our team over the first 3 days. We call it sorting week, and what we do with sorting week is instead not quite down to the starting five, but we're gonna get out of that. Who's our top 12? Who's our probably swing guys? Because we dress 15 guys at home, so there's three swing guys, and then who's our JV team? As we carry enough guys for a JV program. So once we get after those 3 days, we should have a top 12, and now we're going to carry that for about through the first week of games. And in that time, we'd hope our top 12 separate themselves into the first five, the first group off the bench. And we'd also hope the guys that are swing guys or guys that are JV guys are doing their damnedest to prove us wrong. So hopefully we've created a pretty competitive environment just to get a jersey for a home dress, just to get a plane ticket for a road game, just to get into the conversation for coming off the bench, and then even further, get into that conversation for being a starter. So we like to, early in the first 3 days, at least have top 12 figured out, and then let kids try to battle their way through that. And, you know, some kids can decide, you know what, coach, you got me at 15th. I'm going to prove you wrong over the next month. And we love seeing that as well.
What are your keys to preseason, pre-league, Northwest Conference now has gone back to playing that first week in December, so mm-hmm. it comes quick. But you have a lot of non-conference games. Obviously,
right.
you want to win every one of them. But
right.
what are some other things that are important for you to get out of your team in non-conference?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think – we've tried to figure out ways, can we schedule a back-to-back in non-conference that is two completely different opponents? Because I think, like we mentioned earlier, we're going to see that almost weekly in the NWC. So can we handle, not only as a team, but as a staff, can we get reps in preparing our guys for two different styles of games that tip off within 20 hours of themselves? So we don't want to give ourselves, hey, we played Tuesday on the non-conference, so we didn't play again until Friday, then we were off. So we want to go as many times as we can in non-conference Friday, Saturday. And if we can control it the way, you know, at D3, the coaches are doing a lot of the scheduling, if I can get us a pressure team followed by a very physical power-dominated team, I try to stack them back-to-back to give us those looks of, hey, we're going to play George Fox and Coach Hamilton is going to just press the hell out of us. And then we're going to go play TC the next night at Pacific, and they're going to put us in a football cage and try to beat us up. So that's a key for us. I think you have to have a road trip in there that you feel is tough because, obviously, in this league, if you got a chance to make the NWC tournament, you better win some games on the road, and it's going to be all difficult environments. So we try to be sure we have some version of a challenging road stretch in the non-conference. But I think you're right. You also want to have some key points where you feel like, man, if we could get that win at that point, that's a great segue into a finals break. We'd rather be coming off a win before the week of finals where we don't see them very much. Or the Thanksgiving weekend, it's extended break. What's that game, last game before we go into that look like? So there's a lot of factors that go into it that you would love to be able to control. Now, the nature of the NWC and where we're all located, it's hard to be that picky with games you're trying to get or games you're trying to go play at just because of the geographical situation we find ourselves in. But as I've gotten older and more experienced at this, I've tried to keep those scheduling priorities in mind.
Thoughts on this, Kip? Once again, we saw no coaching changes in the Northwest Conference on the men's side for basketball. I always wonder, does that help you as a coach, or is it make any difference? Because you and I, and you, the expert here, you've documented it, how great the coaching is in the Northwest Conference.
Right.
Is that a plus that you kind of know whatever you kind of talked a lot about styles tonight with people? Does that help a little bit when there's no changes?
I think it can do both. I think if you get too, like if I got too comfortable in what I thought Denari was doing at LC or what I thought I was going to see from Coach Lunt at UPS, I think the coaches are so good and so willing to adapt their actual systems to their talent that we could be in trouble. What I try to find out is the characteristics of coaches, what their teams are going to look like. So, for example, you know, in talking to Coach Lunt, boy, they're going to be hard-nosed competitors. You just know no matter what their talent level or what scheme he might be running that year, you're not getting a playoff in that game physically. I mean, it's just going to be a battle. You know Bridges' teams at Whitman are going to play fast and put you in chaos, and they're going to be great in it, and you better find a way to make decisions quicker than you usually do. You know that Coach Logie's teams are going to execute. No matter what it is that he's running, you know, that may vary year to year because he's such a good coach adapting to talent. You know they're not going to mess it up. You know, they're not going to throw balls into the bleachers. They're not going to miss a screen. They're not going to forget this rotation defensively. So you know you're going to have to be sound that night. So I think that part helps. You know, Steve Dickerson at PLU, their ball movement's going to be bar none, one of the tops in the league. They're going to be very unselfish, and they're going to wait for good shots. You're not going to be able to speed them up. So those characteristics, I think, help me, especially as my staff turns over a little bit. and a guy has a scout of somebody that he hasn't scouted before, it helps me give him some tendencies to look for. But I don't think you can count on the same X's and O's. You know, just even looking at us, we're not going to run the same things we ran last year just because, you know, we graduated 3 seniors. It doesn't make any sense to try to make Jordan Jenkins, a sophomore for us, look like Bubba Lucky. They're not the same person. They're not the same skill set. So I think you'll see the turnover in scheme, but the characteristics that each coach puts on their team, I think, stay the same.
Kip, let's put an athletic director's hat on you. You've got a great one there in Val Cleary, but let's put it on you. Just let's steal one from Val just for a second. I take over the Willamette Bearcats as a coach, and I right away want to build my team around how I can beat Whitworth, both on the road and at home. Where did I go wrong there?
Trying to beat Whitworth on the road? That might be your first assumption that's going to be tough to do. You know, I think what I've found, and I think I've been lucky enough at Willamette, is Val is trying to find ways to try to level the playing field, so to speak, and make sure that how we travel, for example, is different now than how we traveled when I first took over and when I was assistant for Gordy. The thought process that goes into getting to Whitworth on that trip, or even going to Tacoma, you know, the night before as compared to the night of that we did for so many years. I mean, it is virtually impossible to drive day of, you know, leave at 8 a.m. and go play Justin at 8 p.m. or Coach Dickerson at 8 p.m. and expect to win. That's just not doable. But the budget, the way they used to have the budgets for us for a long time, kind of required that you find different ways to shave dollars, and that might have been going up day of. Now those considerations are much more aligned with success for the programs. I don't think that's just for hoops. I think that's for football, volleyball, everyone traveling in this league. I think that's the first area that you want to make sure you're giving enough money to the coaches in each program to make sure the travel arrangement is as seamless and as advantageous as possible. Obviously, being on the road in and of itself makes you're going to be at a disadvantage, and you should be. That's part of the home and home setup. But if you can find a way to get some more money into the programs, they can go up the night before, they can have better person-to-bed accommodation. You know, you don't want to be jamming two of our bigs into the same bed because you're trying to skimp room costs. You want to make sure you're at nice hotels that offer you the breakfast in the morning. You know, those type of considerations I think are big, and I think that's absolutely something I've been lucky enough to have at Willamette. Is bosses like Val who recognize that and try to find ways to make that happen for us.
Do you like my playoff suggestion that instead of 4 out of the 9 teams make it, 6 out of the 9 make it, 6 and 3 play 4 and 5, and then your highest seeds play the lowest seeds after
absolutely.
That? I just think it's kind of ridiculous. 4 out of 9 make it. It's such a great league. And as I always say, college experience, obviously you want to get a degree and you want to succeed in life, but also, you know, you want to be able to play the saxophone, be on the speech team, be on the Willamette basketball team.
Right. No, I completely agree with you. You're speaking to the choir with the 6 persons. You know, part of that is research I've done on my own, and you take a look across the country at conferences with 9 or more teams like us, and almost to, I would say it's about 85% to 90% of those leagues that look like us, numbers-wise, have more teams in their postseason field than we do. So I think that's a big consideration that we should try to get ourselves more in line with the conferences across the country. I also think it makes for better league play overall because more teams are playing for something late in the year. So I know our year when we made it 2 years ago in the NWC tournament, which was a huge milestone for our program, we played down to the very last game against Coach Cleary and Pacific. Both of us were playing the very last night, the very last second of the regular season for something. You know, and there's 5 teams right there instead of just 3 or 4 that are already guaranteed a spot. They clinched it 3 weeks before, and now they're going. You know, I think it means a lot when there's 6 or 7 or 8 of us still playing for postseason berths. And then, like you mentioned, just the student-athlete experience, I think, is through the roof when you have 6 of the teams in the field are getting into the tournament and having a, you know, having quarterfinals, having a way to advance, having fans that get it fair. Oh, if they win that game, then they'll be in the semis here. The tournament championship will be here. I think all that's great for our league. All that's great for the interest level. All that's great for the excitement and the memories. You know, for my playing days, I remember the NWC tournament, us going to Lewis and Clark and winning, then going to Linfield and winning in 2000, the title game. And that's something, I can't tell you the score, but I can tell you the celebration on the court afterwards. I can remember vividly every second of that. So I think those are all considerations that I've argued for, and I know there's a lot of coaches in our league that have argued for as well, to expand the number of teams in the tournament.
And one thing I'm never going to let anybody tell me, because I'm going to knock them down, not physically, I'm a nonviolent person, but when they say, oh, we can't do that because it cuts into the academics, that's insulting every man and woman in this conference, because this is an academic conference first and foremost, which happens to have good athletics.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, our student athletes are balancing their time and practicing their time management skills from the second they step on campus in August as a freshman to the time they graduate. They're very versed in time management skills. So, and our league plays Friday, Saturdays almost universally throughout the year anyway. We minimize time missed already throughout the season. So I'm 100% with you on that. And like you said, I won't knock anybody down, but to argue too.
Hey, Kip, you know, great comments about Coach Tinkle. I got to know him a little bit, you know, when he was up at Portland State always playing, and I would always talk to him, and what a gracious person he is, and he's doing great at Oregon State. But besides going down there, what was something of that really helped you with your coaching this past summer that you did, or maybe a book you read or something along those lines?
Well, that's a great question. I think something that's absolutely revolutionized my way of thinking about how we practice is a book by Brian McCormick called Fake Fundamentals. And he's an author that's coached at a lot of different levels in a lot of different countries, and he really takes a modern approach to how we go about teaching. And it's not arguing that fundamentals aren't important, but how we teach them has gotten pretty stale, and it doesn't reflect the chaos and the random nature of the basketball game. So just quickly, you know, we always put, you know, youth players or even our own players in stationary ball handling drills. Well, what's missing from a stationary ball handling drill, no matter how many balls you add, how quick you ask them to do it, whatever move you're telling them to do, what's missing from that is what's going to happen to them in a game is the human being guarding them. So those stationary ball handling videos look great. As a coach, you feel awesome because you've got all 20 guys pounding a ball in unison. And if another coach came in and watched, he'd marvel at how organized your practice is. And then you go to Walla Walla and Bridgeland's team turns you over 37 times. And that was me. You know, that was our exact flaw, is we're not practicing the chaos that happens in a basketball game that I, as a coach, can't help them with during the game. So I need to put them, and I need to lose a little bit of control in my practice and let chaos happen more. So just give you an example, when we're practicing ball handling, we're going to make somebody give them a basketball, tell them they can't tag anybody without doing the move we want them to practice. So let's say you're you have to do a behind-the-back crossover before you tag anybody. But that person that's running from you, just playing a game of tag like recess at elementary school, they're practicing their real agility reacting to you, and you're practicing using a move versus the variable that is a human being out there with you. So, you know, at first our guys looked at me like I'm insane, but as they started to figure it out, and my staff even probably gave me some, what are we doing? I'm 100% in on it. And it doesn't just stop with ball handling and agility. It goes through every facet of practice that you run. If you don't have sudden change and chaotic random variables, you're not preparing them for the game. And that's something that has really helped me. It was very humbling to take a look at all the things that I now look back on that I was doing wrong, but I think will be very, very beneficial for us going forward.
Great job tonight, Kip. It's awesome to know you. I consider you a good friend, and it's awesome to have you on this program. You really bring it every time you're on. I learn something every time, and that's what it's all about.
No,
have a great
Greg.
Month, and I'll see you soon, and I'll look forward to talking to you in the month of November.
Absolutely. Thanks, sir. Have a good night.
You betcha. That's Skip Iowan, the head men's basketball coach at Willamette University in beautiful Salem, Oregon, a member of the Northwest Conference Division III. And thank you, everybody, for the great audience tonight, huge audience. And thanks for all the comments you talk about Kip when we have him on. People love him, and we're going to continue to have him on once a month and maybe more often. Good night, everyone. Have a great week. And don't forget to make your free throws. We'll be back next Wednesday night.